Headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We all love a good night's sleep, but getting a good night's sleep isn't always easy. For some of us, sleeplessness is an occasional problem. For others, it's chronic and could suggest other problems. Well, tonight on this Medical Monday, we're going to look at sleep disorders and try to help you get through the night in peace. My guest is Dr. Peter Weitzel. He is with the Howard University Sleep Disorder Center. If you have a comment or if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Weitzel, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here. I am grateful for the opportunity to try to get awareness of sleep medicine and its importance out there for the public.
Well, let's first start with something really basic. How big of a problem is sleeplessness for the general public? Is it just a really big problem, or do you think it's overstated?
So I would expand it to just sleep disorders and sleep problems in general. And what I would say is that it is a tremendous issue that every year we're getting more and more information in that, first of all, the quantity of sleep that people get is extremely important. So we're seeing a lot of health consequences when people don't get enough hours of sleep. And then increasingly, we're expanding our understanding of when you have a specific sleep disorder, how that can take a big toll on your health and create serious issues like cardiovascular disease and other problems. So both quantity and quality are important, and it is highly prevalent in our population that there's trouble.
What is a good amount of sleep for an adult to get? Let's say a 30 to 40 year old. 6 hours, 8 hours, what?
So the answer to that does have to be, it depends. So when we do our studies, what we can say is if we take the population in general and we look at as hours for sleep start to go down, there we start to see the lower you go, the more problems start to arise, such as we see high blood pressure is directly correlating with not enough hours of sleep. And so the lower, the more serious and the more problems there can be. When we try to say what a given person needs, it's a little tricky because we all have our own internal wiring, and for some of us, less sleep may do the job. But in general, we think probably for about 80 to 90% of the population, they should be above 7 hours with the amount of sleep they get. And if you go below that, that's where we start seeing all the problems starting to come.
What is quality sleep?
So simply, it's going to be the sleep that allows you to feel functional and do well, have a good normal mood, be properly awake and safe as you go through your daytime. So to some degree, it's these subjective things that people are aware of, although we know it's a little more complicated than that because there are some people who have no complaints. They think they're sleeping fine, but they may have some serious disorders such as sleep apnea where the breathing is not going well. They don't really know anything wrong is happening, but it is taking a toll on their health. And so how you feel is important, but sometimes it's also important what's really going on objectively too.
How do you know that any of the health issues are directly related to lack of sleep? I mean, it could be something that you ate. It could be a medicine that you are perhaps taking. It could be stress on the job. So how do you know?
So there's kind of two main ways that we've gotten that information. So one is population studies. So we We take a large community and we look at hours of sleep and we see what are the health problems that seem to be arising as we get less and less sleep. So that would be one line of evidence. Another way we've started to learn things is we will take a young, healthy volunteer and we'll put them in our laboratory, and for a period of time, we will restrict their hours of sleep, and we'll look at all the different changes taking place in the body. And so under these circumstances, we've demonstrated things such as normally during sleep, our blood pressure is going to be going down, and we're going to be resting our heart. If you sleep deprive someone young and healthy, we start to see blood pressure going up. The arteries start to get stiffer and less responsive. We start to see blood sugars going up. We start putting out more insulin. We find that even our eating choices start to change. So when we're sleep deprived, rather than going for the good healthy choices, the fruits and the salads, when we're in a sleep deprived state, we start making some going for the fat and the sugar and the things that really we kind of lose our control, so to speak. And now we're starting to see very clearly insufficient sleep is putting the pounds on people, and it really does correlate with weight gain quite closely.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about sleep. Are you getting enough? Are you having difficulty sleeping? Give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Now, Dr. White, so the Sleep Disorders Center here at Howard University has compiled a study as it relates to African Americans and sleep. Can you talk to me a little bit about what you found?
So, because we feel that it's so important to identify these sleep disorders, there have been some questionnaires that have been developed by the field to try to pinpoint who would be at risk for a condition such as sleep apnea. So there were various indicators that have been identified in the general population, such as loud snoring and reporting feeling tired and having blood pressure elevation, some of these indicators. And a common questionnaire was actually something called Stop Bang that people have found is quite predictive. What we have just recently done at Howard is taken that questionnaire and looked specifically at our African American population to see how this questionnaire would perform. And what we've just learned is it does not perform as well, unfortunately, in our African American community, that these normal indicators are not quite as predictive, and we're going to have to be more sensitive. We're going to have to really start to look more carefully how we can identify things, because the tools that are used in the general population are not serving our African American community very well.
Briefly summarize for me, what is the difference? What's missing with the general population when compared to the black community?
Well, that's where further research is needed. So whether it's that our community is just not aware of the snoring and pauses, and so they don't have access to observers as often, or whether it's subjectively they just aren't feeling the tiredness as other populations. We really don't have the next step in answering that question, and that's where further research is needed, and we're intending to pursue that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is Medical Monday, and we are looking at sleep disorders and sleeplessness, insomnia, and the like. Are you having difficulty getting a good night's sleep? Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Donna, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hello.
I have some questions about sleep disorder, because I know for a fact that I have sleep problems, Now, I don't know if I have sleep apnea because I know once my doctor wanted to, for me to get a, like a test. And so I started having sleep problems when I had a problem with my relatives. I had a big fight with them. After that, I couldn't sleep. But
so what's your question, Donna?
My question is that I have to take medicine every night to go to sleep because I wake up like every 3 to 4 hours if I don't take my medicine. But if I take my medicine, I'll sleep longer. But the gabapentin helps my back. So my question is that I think I do have a sleep problem, so what should I really do about I go to bed late because I take care of my mom.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me see what Dr. Weitzel has to say about that, your thoughts about what she was suggesting.
So I think that's a great question. What do you do when you're worried that there might be a problem? And I would say, you know, first stop is probably the primary care doctor and to kind of run by some of the issues. And sometimes it's relatively straightforward and they can kind of sort it out in the office with you right then and there. But sometimes it's not so obvious, and it does take a little deeper dive to know what all the factors are. And that's where I think a consultation with a sleep medicine specialty doctor can really sort things out the best so that either, again, you know, it can kind of be resolved by trying some behavioral changes or other things, or then maybe it would come down to testing to try to evaluate the health of your sleep a little more in detail.
How might somebody contact you at the Howard University Sleep Disorder Center before I go forward? Because I'm sure a lot of people are interested in finding out how they can get a good night's sleep. How might they contact you, Doctor?
So one of two pathways is what I would suggest. Again, working through your primary care doctor. So we always want to know that you've had kind of the general medical issues looked at and that there isn't something like unrecognized diabetes or low thyroid or some condition like that. So ask your doctor, you know, that this is what's going on and you're really concerned about sleep, and then they can refer on. Or we do recommend or we do welcome people coming directly to the center if you feel that's appropriate. Our telephone number, 202-865-2122. We think the 2122 number, we like that because to treat one is to treat two is the way we feel about things. When we treat someone with sleep apnea, we're usually helping the bed partner as well.
If there is a bed partner, for example.
that's correct.
Yeah. So. Donna, thank you so much. You know, Donna did mention something that struck me. She said that she had an argument with her family, and that was one of the issues that kind of contributed to her sleeplessness. What part might stress play in having difficulty sleeping?
So stress is often a very big role in insomnia disorders. But it's also a little tricky because what can happen is there is some major stress in our life, you know, some death of a close relative or a loss of job or some event that injects a lot of stress into your life. But then you overcome and you get over it. But what we find is that even though now the stress is gone, you've kind of developed some unfortunate patterns and habits and things that are detrimental, and so your sleep problems can kind of persist even though what kind of kicked them off has now resolved. And so many times the stress is gone, but the sleep disorder persists, and so we have to come up with some strategies to try and address that.
Okay, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about sleep disorders tonight, and we're going to try to help you get a good night's sleep. Denise, quickly, what's on your mind?
Hi, how are you two today?
Fine, go right ahead, please.
Okay, so I have a couple of concerns. One concern is I may get to sleep at a good time, but I will always wake up like 3-4 hours before it's time for me to get up. Or I may not get to sleep in a good time, and I may still wake up before it's time to get up. I am in my early 50s. I'm not sure if menopause is having something to do with it or not. I do find myself sometimes taking Tylenol PM to help me rest throughout the entire night. So I'm just wondering, what could that, you know, what could that be?
So the answer, unfortunately, is that it's not always simple and straightforward with just a few symptoms to kind of sort it out, because many different factors could create the same kind of picture. And so what you would need is to really sit down with someone and kind of go through all the aspects of your sleep to see which factors might be contributing, and to try to get to the underlying issue. Although also many times it's not an issue. It is three or four or five little issues that all take their piece of your sleep, and we have to address each one individually.
Hold on one second, Denise, because I want to follow up with something that you said, but I need to take a break. So, Denise, I need you to stay on the line. Renee calling from Virginia. We're going to be talking to you next. Also, Shindel calling from Aurora, Illinois. We're also going to talk to you. If you're on the line, please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program, and we will get to your phone calls. Also, lines are still open. We will continue to take phone calls even after 7:30 at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And as always, there will be a podcast on WHUR.com after 8:30, and information about the Howard University Sleep Disorder Center. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. On this Medical Monday, we are looking at sleep disorders, and we're trying to help you get through the night with a good night's sleep. My guest is Dr. Peter Weitzel. He is with the Howard University Sleep Disorder Center. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, we were talking to Denise, and she was saying that she has broken sleep, where she may get to sleep and then not be able to stay asleep. She was suggesting that perhaps the early stages of menopause may be a contributing factor. What about that? Let's throw everything out and just talk about, for example, you know, those women that are, you know, in menopause or maybe perimenopausal. What impact might that have on their sleep?
So menopause does have a tremendous effect, and it is the start of insomnia and sleep difficulties for many women. You know, it's a very real problem, and what do we do about it? So, I mean, of course, one can try and adjust to the hormonal changes with various medication responses, go on estrogen supplements and those kinds of things, which have their pros and cons that you'd have to talk over with your primary care physician. But beyond that, secondly, we have to look at what you're doing in terms of your patterns and habits, and are you starting to do some of the detrimental things that start to interfere with sleep and create a cascade of adverse effects for you and your sleep. So some of these behavioral aspects can really compound the problem. And then even beyond that, we do know these hormonal changes can lead to the development of some sleep disorders such as sleep apnea. So estrogen is, in fact, somewhat protective of women from sleep apnea, and when they go into menopause, they actually lose that protection and they start to have the same risk for sleep apnea that men do. And so we have to also think about, could that also be the start of a specific sleep disorder?
Okay. Denise, thank you so much for your phone call. Good luck to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to back up a little bit and talk about some of the practices that may be interfering with sleep or may not necessarily help with sleep, or people, for example, short of medications, Tylenol PM and the like, does warm milk help?
Well, any routine that a person finds calming and relaxing can be a helpful addition to your sleep. So it doesn't matter whether it's a warm bath, cold bath, whatever a person personally finds to be a relaxing, sleep-inducing kind of behavior, it's good to have our routines, and we kind of get the body in a rhythm, and then that can promote sleep.
What about alcohol?
Alcohol has a number of undesirable qualities. So initially, it is a relaxant, and we'll find that it is a little easier to get to sleep. But there's a number of double-edged sword kind of adverse effects that it brings with it. So one is that it actually gets changed by the body, metabolized, so to speak, into products that then wake us up, and we have more sleep trouble, more insomnia as the night goes on. So it actually breaks our sleep once it puts us to sleep. And then secondly, it actually, as a muscle relaxant, is going to tend to make the muscles in our throat relax, and it will promote more snoring and more sleep apnea. And so it's not so favorable from that standpoint. So it's not a good substance as a sleep aid.
What about people who eat before they go to bed? Getting a piece of chicken that was cooked earlier in the day, and you just want to snack on that, or a piece of cake or a cookie or something right before you go to bed. Good idea, bad idea? What do you think?
A big meal or a full stomach when you go to bed is a bad idea.
Why is that?
Well, it's going to actually restrict our breathing a little bit, so we don't have as good deep breaths as we should. We're going to be more likely to have what we call acid reflux, where things are coming up from the stomach into our chest, and that's not a healthy thing to experience. So big meals, not a good idea. Going to bed hungry is probably not a good idea either, though.
Where are we going here, Doc?
Where's
the Goldilocks growling, thing
that,
here?
That's the way it is. You got to find the happy medium, and just the right amount is what probably is best. A little something, but not too much.
Okay. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Shindel calling from Aurora, Illinois. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I have a question. Okay, my brother got killed 4 years ago. Then I'm a dialysis person. I don't get much sleep. I come in after dialysis and take like maybe a 2-3 hour nap, and then I'm up for the rest of the night after I get up once my son gets in, and I'm up until the next day, and I don't go back to sleep till that evening of the following next day, and I have to get up at like maybe 12 something to get ready for dialysis.
So it sounds pretty rough, and again, we know a little bit about you and some of the things that might be at work here. But I guess what I would say, the first point with insomnia is that the field of sleep medicine has moved away from medication as the first line of treatment when there is a chronic insomnia problem. So are, you know, we would try to get to the bottom of what's going on. And then if we do, when we come to the treatment aspect, we would try not to make medication our first approach, but we would try to work on all the behaviors and the kind of way your body is responding to the situation of being in the bed and some of these psychological aspects. So we really work on behavioral treatments as our first line of attack, but at times there is a role for medication and that can be brought into the picture. But we would also want to rule out that there is some kind of underlying sleep disorder at work here, which we can see in dialysis patients, and a good comprehensive sleep evaluation would be the first step.
Okay, Renee, thank you so much for your question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Renee calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Renee. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold.
Hi.
I was calling because I was diagnosed with sleep apnea. Okay, so a procedure that I had done discovered that I had it. So that information was passed on to my primary care, and he gave me a referral to go and have the test done, the sleep apnea test done. Well, my insurance, they declined it. So I had to go back to the primary care and tell him that the insurance, they declined it based on, I guess, whatever information he gave them. So he then chose to write up another referral for me to see a, I think it's a pulmonary doctor of some sort, which I'm still kind of like lost and confused about it. And I'm just wondering if the doctor can help me figure out how do I go about trying to get this test done with and having my insurance pass it through because I know I need help.
Well, let me stop you there, Renee. Any thoughts about that at all? Because I do know, and we've discussed this on this on this program before, that heart health and a good night's sleep and a whole lot of other things, you know, come together to impact one's overall health. So your thoughts about her question?
Sure. So it is unfortunate that insurance companies are coming into patient rooms and kind of inserting their opinions about what can be done and what should be done. But I think still that there are solutions to her problems. And sleep doctors in particular, we kind of know how to work with insurance companies. So while they may not want to approve the come to the sleep lab and spend the night, many times they will approve what's called a home sleep study, which is a less expensive test. And for the right person, that can be an adequately informative test, and it can give us the information we need to take care of them. So, again, I'd kind of encourage working with someone with special expertise in sleep medicine, and many pulmonologists, lung doctors, are knowledgeable about sleep apnea because it is a breathing disorder, a sleep and breathing disorder. So the pulmonary doctor hopefully would be able to help you with that issue. But we know how to deal with insurance companies and make the most of things, so it shouldn't be a complete obstacle to getting the care that you need.
And one thing before we let Renee go, because and I defer to you, Dr. Weitzel, not a cardiologist, obviously, but you know, obviously, we're talking to an African American woman. We know that heart health, cardiopulmonary health presents differently in women than it does in men. And so it seems to me that attempting to address the sleep issue and maybe going around, if I made the back way, to find out whether or not, you know, her cardiopulmonary system is healthy may be a good thing.
We really feel strongly about that sleep disorders, both quantity and quality, and especially sleep apnea, it has a very major effect on the cardiovascular system, and it's very tightly linked to high blood pressure. It's linked to heart arrhythmias, congestive heart failure, heart attacks, stroke, all these problems. And again, we feel this is of vital importance, particularly to the African-American community, which suffers with cardiovascular problems at an increased rate and probably is the number one factor in an increased mortality rate. Sleep disorders, we know from our population studies, occur at an increased frequency and severity in the African-American community. And we feel it's a big driving force behind this increased cardiovascular disease that the community experiences. So we really want to be working on getting early recognition and treatment underway.
Get that ticker check, Renee. You never know what you may find, and maybe you'll get some good news on the backside. So thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lewis calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Lewis. What's on your mind?
I'm a diabetic. I'm with the VA, and I've been on this medication called amitriptyline for like 35 years.
Okay.
Within the last 18 months, this psychologist doctor finally got me off of this, but I haven't slept. I mean, I haven't had a good night's sleep since I've been off of it. I can't sleep without it, so they got me on you know, all kinds of other medicines I'm trying and stuff, but it's nothing like amitriptyline.
Let me ask Dr. Weitzel, what is amitriptyline, if you're familiar with it at all, and what impact might it have on his sleeping?
So amitriptyline is a medicine we've had for a very long time. It was originally developed as an antidepressant. We do use it for other things as well, such as chronic pain and other conditions. One of its side effects is that it will cause drowsiness. The stronger the dose, the more drowsiness it causes. And so in some cases, it's a side effect. In some cases, if you take it at night, then it can be something that will get you to sleep and keep you asleep. And it sounds like it helped in that regard. So you need to, I guess, talk with the doctor in charge about why they felt they needed to take you off of it. And if, you know, there was some problem it was creating, there potentially could be other medicines that could be substituted. Or again, whenever there's sleep problems, we always want to start with the lifestyle and the behavioral modification changes that, you know, those things don't have cost and side effect. And we always want to accomplish what we can with those strategies and bring in medication as second line.
Lewis, thank you so much for your phone call. I want to, before I go back to the phone lines, Mary from Baltimore, Terry from D.C., we're going to come to you next. I want to ask about some foundational practices for those perhaps who are only having periodic sleeplessness. A lot of people watch TV. I do before I go to bed. I'm watching the news until I fall asleep. Through your interaction with patients, your research, what mistakes are people making before they go to bed that you believe making some adjustments will help them get a better night's sleep?
Well, the issues you raised of the electronics at night, we know does take a big toll on our society. And, you know, one, it is just keeping us up later into the night than probably we would be up if we listened to our body and gave it a chance to tell us what to do. But then number two, the light from these devices is sending a message to our brain that it is still daytime. So light is really the big cue to the body when what we're supposed to be doing at what time. And We're really sending our body a confusing message when we got all this light coming on at 11, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock at night. We're sending it the message it's daytime. And there's a hormone that our body produces called melatonin. And what we're doing is we're shutting off that production, so we really can't get into the night mode, so to speak. And that can really kind of create some chaos with our normal body's rhythms.
So put the devices down, the iPads, the cell phones.
Get the light away from your eyes late at night, and try to do some dim light kind of activities. That would be my suggestion.
What would you recommend as a dim light activity?
Listening to WHUR.
Let us hope that this program does not put them to sleep. You can listen to The Quiet Storm when you go to sleep tonight at midnight, or Pillow Talk with Angela Stribling. But we want you wide awake when you are listening to this program. And about television also, I know a lot of people, I've heard a lot of people say that they will watch television and they will put a timer, you know, these smart TVs, you can put a timer on them and they'll shut off after 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever, in the event that they become drowsy. Good idea?
Better than the TV staying on all night, which we hear about quite often in our clinic. So not as bad as it might be, but again, you know, all that light and electronics, it can be a challenge. And we really like people to have the internal resources to kind of get themselves to sleep on their own when possible.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Mary. Mary calling from Baltimore. Hey, Mary, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was saying, I have sleep apnea, and I've had sleep apnea for many years, and I do use the CPAP machine at night. But my problem is, I would think that after all this time, I would be used to the CPAP machine, and I just haven't gotten there, because I find myself, I could put it on, and I wake up, and it's laying on the other side of the bed, or for some reason, I've just done snatched it off, or even a lot of times I fall asleep and don't put it on. I'm trying to find, is there another method or some other device or something that I could use other than the CPAP machine?
And I've heard a lot about it. What does the CPAP machine do?
So CPAP is CPAP. It stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure. And it's getting to the heart of obstructive sleep apnea, which is where things fall back and your throat chokes up and blocks up, because as everything relaxes, it's collapsing and you don't have a good air passage. And so the machine is keeping a little air pressure in the back of your throat, and that allows you to have a wide open airway all night long and breathe normally like you're supposed to. So your question is an excellent one, and I would say yes, there are definitely some alternative strategies besides the CPAP in terms of treating sleep apnea. Although before we go there, I would also say that you should be working with your sleep doctor on trying to get things as comfortable as they can be. So they make about 30 different styles of masks. There's many little ways to vary how the machine blows air. There's all kinds of little comfort issues that can sometimes make the difference. So you want to give it the full chance before you say this is just not going to work. But if you do come to that conclusion, then there are other ways we can address it. It would be kind of individualized to you. It could be, you know, many times weight is an important factor, and we come up with strategies to get the weight down, and that can be curative to sleep apnea. Sometimes the position that someone's in makes a huge difference. People can be sometimes severe on their backs and just breathe normally on their sides or stomach. And for those people with positional sleep apnea, just effective position training can make all the difference. There are some times where a dental device could be used as an alternative to the machine. So working with a specialist that knows how to design these, it can be a strategy. Sometimes we work with surgery, and there are ways surgically to try to get the airway to stay open better at night. That could be pursued.
That's a lot.
And even in our new space age we live in, there are now what are called neurostimulators that can be used as a treatment for sleep apnea. So a little procedure where a device that stimulates the nerves of the throat can be turned on when you go to sleep, and it will allow the muscles to stay more active and keep the air passage open. So, and that's not even an all-inclusive list, but there are many alternatives.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for your phone call. Let me go to Terry. Terry calling from D.C. Terry, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I appreciate everything that's been said. However, I wanted to know what's being done to increase the awareness of the African-American community of other sleep disorders besides sleep apnea and insomnia. I have one that hasn't been mentioned. And
what is it?
I have excessive daytime sleepiness.
Excessive daytime sleepiness? Is that narcolepsy?
Pretty much.
Okay.
But it's not talked about a lot, and our community doesn't know a lot about it. And I think there are more people that's suffering with sleep disorders other than insomnia and apnea, and sleep deprivation in any way, whether you know, daytime or nighttime, it's a real critical thing. So I was wondering, from the doctor in your sleep center, are you guys promoting, or how are you educating the community?
Well, even before we talk about promoting, I think we need to stick to, or at least address the issue. What is the difference between just being tired during the day and narcolepsy, or as she put it, excessive daytime sleepiness? Is that, are we talking about three different tired, excessive sleepiness, or actual narcolepsy? Are those three things different?
So excessive daytime sleepiness is, in fact, a symptom, not a diagnosis. So it is indicating that you don't function, you don't remain awake properly, and we have different ways we can try to be a little precise about describing how severe a problem that is. And excessive sleepiness in the daytime could come from any disorder such as insomnia or sleep apnea or restless legs or shift work disorder. Any of these disorders could create the excessive daytime sleepiness. Or there is, as was mentioned, this specific condition called narcolepsy, which is a brain or a neurologic condition where the parts of the brain that are supposed to be functioning and keeping us awake are not doing their job. And it doesn't matter so much what goes on at night. If those parts of the brain are just underperforming, then we're going to have excessive sleepiness and sometimes some other symptoms that go along with narcolepsy. So the excessive sleepiness is really the final product of potentially a lot of different things that could create that condition. And it's a serious symptom because quality of life and safety can, you know, really be adversely affected. So I would say exploring further what might be responsible, and potentially it is, again, more the brain not doing its job that's creating that excessive sleepiness, and that definitely does deserve serious attention and effort at treatment.
Is it possible that, you know, for some people, we haven't really touched on it, and I only have about 3 minutes left, and I want to get one other thing in about exercise, because some people who may be tired during the day, they may not be exercising, and the fact that they may be tired during the day or sleepy during the day is because they don't sleep at night.
So that kind of comes back to what I had said earlier about it isn't necessarily one problem, but each little problem takes its own little piece. And so if you have a sedentary lifestyle and you don't get the exercise, that has its own little contribution to how you sleep and how you feel during the daytime. And so you really want to bring in every tool you can to do better, feel better, and exercise can be an extremely valuable part of many different sleep conditions.
Okay, Terry, thank you so much for your phone call. I only have about a minute or so left, but power naps, good or bad, how long should they be? Do you recommend them?
So my answer, once again, I think I probably say this to most of your questions, is it depends. So they're not good if they're making up for bad nighttime patterns and routines and you're trying to just compensate for an inadequate night. We'd much rather you do what you're supposed to at night and not feel the need for the nap. But on the other hand, if, you know, there are people that they just have a very demanding life and they just cannot get the hours of sleep that they need at night, and it probably is better to get, you know, the sleep, even if it is in little bits and pieces, wherever you can, to try to get as much into your 24 hours as you can.
Interesting. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Peter Weitzel with the Howard University Sleep Disorder Center. I really appreciate you coming in and not falling asleep during this Medical Monday program. But again, I really appreciate you coming in. And as always, the podcast will be on the WHUR.com website after 8:30 tonight, as well as information for contacting the Howard University Sleep Disorder Center. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Monday, August 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.